everyone, and welcome to episode 51 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. Before we get started, I just wanted to let you know about a new addition to the podcast. Starting this week, the Medieval Podcast is broadening its horizons by allowing for more sponsorship opportunities in order to keep us going. This week's episode has been sponsored by Podcorn, which is a new online marketplace that connects podcasters to sponsors so that both podcasters and sponsors can find themselves the right fit. I really want to make sure that the sponsors for this podcast are ones that make sense to you, the listeners, and I found that Podcorn's platform makes it easy to connect with companies that I think can be useful to you. It also makes it possible for me to collaborate directly with these companies so that you don't have to listen to the same boring ads over and over again. Definitely a win-win. Because I really care about what you hear when you tune in, Podcorn is a great fit that gives me the freedom and the control to only bring you the stuff that's useful in a way that's not stuffy. So thank you, Podcorn, for sponsoring this episode. You can find out more about how it works at podcorn.com. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I'm looking into something really interesting, I fall down a different rabbit hole and I can't seem to get enough about information about a totally different topic. And this happened to me when I was writing my new book, Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction. And I was looking into the cleanliness of the Middle Ages, because I think people are always kind of thinking of the Middle Ages as a very dirty time. So this was something that I wanted to address in the book. And so I started to look into medieval laundry. And this was a rabbit hole that I just kept falling down into this. So you'll see it in the book. If you've read the book, there is a short section on medieval laundry. But I was just so interested in this topic that I learned a lot more about it than I was able to put into the book. So I thought today I will talk to you about medieval laundry. This is something that, you know, maybe you don't come across in courses about the Middle Ages or even novels about the Middle Ages. But I think it's really interesting. So today, we're going to talk about medieval laundry. So I think the first thing that we need to address when we look at medieval laundry is, what were the things that needed to be washed? And I mean, the first answer, of course, is clothes. We need to wash our clothes. I think that there's kind of an idea of, in the Middle Ages, people only had one outfit and that was it. And that, you know, in some cases that was true. But we think of it as a time where people may not have had a lot of clothes to wear or to wash, and that they were kind of okay with them being dirty. I mean, this is a time when people would wear hair shirts, right? So this means that, you know, people enjoyed being dirty, or they were at least okay with things like lice and vermin. So first of all, let's address that. People were not interested in having lice and vermin on their bodies. I think that is something that is kind of a universal truth about people. We don't like to have vermin on our bodies. The people who were wearing things like hair shirts were doing this on purpose to actually think about bodily suffering as a way of practicing religious devotion. So most people were not really interested in having gross things on their bodies, so they did wash their clothes. And in the Middle Ages, people were wearing several layers. Usually they would wear linen close to their skin, so kind of an under tunic a lot of the time. It would look kind of like a T-shaped garment for men and for women. So you'd have linen next to your skin, and that would be the thing that you would wash most often, because as now, the thing that's close to your body is the thing that's going to pick up dry skin and sweat and all of those things that maybe we don't want to think about too much. And on top of that, you'd be wearing something that was more decorative or warmer. So on top of your linen, you might have wool or another layer of finer linen or something like that. You might have silk, you might have fur on top of that. So you'd have several layers, and you'd be washing the ones that were closest to your skin most often, the ones that were further out least often. And I think this is something that is common to us today. We do wash our shirts and pants probably as often as we wash our undies, but we don't wash our coats as much, for example. So what were the things that needed to be washed? Well, definitely clothes. And one of my favorite things, I did put it in the book, is in the Rule of Saint Benedict. He says, you know, if you're going to go on a trip outside the monastery walls, you should probably wear underwear. Just take a pair from the communal store, but when you come back, just wash them before you put them back. So we know people are washing clothes, everything from garments up. Even monks are washing their underwear before they put it back in the communal store. So people are washing their clothes, and they're washing the clothes that they're wearing every day. And they also have seasonal clothes, which they need to wash and put away, because, you know, in Europe, there it's not just one season. So you have seasonal clothes that you have to wash as well. But also think about the different textiles that you touch in a day. And when you think about that, it kind of adds up. So we have clothes to wash. We have bedding to wash. And that means the mattress cover. People usually stuffed a mattress. So that means you could wash the mattress cover, wash your sheets, wash your blankets, your pillowcase. Again, this would probably be something that was stuffed instead of a separate pillowcase put over that. Your bed hangings. If you're rich, especially, you'd have hangings around your bed, a kind of four-poster or a canopy bed. There's also rugs, tapestries, regular curtains. If you had to divide a room in half, that might need to get washed from time to time. But also things that were used more often and got dirtier, things like tablecloths and napkins and handkerchiefs and towels and cleaning cloths. All of these things would have to get washed. And when you think about this in terms of the type of laundering you'd have to do back in the day, you couldn't just toss it into a washing machine. If you had people coming over for a feast, you know, that is a lot of laundry, tablecloths, napkins, all that kind of stuff, towels, hand towels for people washing their hands before and after they eat. So there's a lot of laundry that had to be washed in the Middle Ages. So I think this is something we need to recognize first. There was a lot of laundry being done in the Middle Ages. So it wasn't something that you wouldn't run into. If you had a time machine, you'd go back in time and you'd come across people washing clothes and other stuff. So there was a lot of laundry being done in the Middle Ages, which brings us to the question, who was doing all the laundry? So in the Middle Ages, it was mostly women who were doing the laundry, whether they were doing it in their own household or whether they were professional laundresses. Now, professional laundresses were not looked upon well in the community. They were kind of akin to prostitutes. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for this. One of the reasons is that they had quite a lot of freedom to move around the community as part of their work. So they're going door to door, picking up laundry from their clients, getting paid directly by their clients. And you know, when you have a woman going door to door in the Middle Ages, this is immediately cause for moral suspicion, right? She must be up to something. So there's that. There's also the fact that these women, they're doing their laundry, the laundry for their clients, in public spaces with other women. And when you have a lot of women in public spaces talking together, you know, this is another thing that in the Middle Ages was seen as kind of dangerous, because these women are talking about stuff that maybe they shouldn't be talking about, and we may not be able to control their speech because there are so many of them. So having all these women in communal spaces talking and having a bit of freedom, that was something that made people morally uneasy. So there's that. There's also the fact that when you're washing clothes in the Middle Ages, you can't just toss them in the washing machine. You have to wash them by hand. And it's very hard to do that modestly. So not only are these women getting wet and probably their clothes are sticking to their form more than somebody who is walking around doing other things, but also they have to tuck their skirts out of the way. They have to tuck their sleeves out of the way. So they are showing more skin than most women in the Middle Ages would be showing. It's possible that some of these women turned to prostitution as a way to supplement their incomes as laundresses. But in the Middle Ages, all laundresses were kind of looked on with suspicion, unless you were one of the lucky ones who may have been a royal laundress, in which case you might have had more immunity to being painted with that brush. But laundresses, you'd find them everywhere. They were in the followers' camps that would follow armies. They were necessary to be washing monks and nuns' clothes as well. Sometimes you'd have a monastic house that would have people that would be washing the clothes for the monks. Again, in the rule of Saint Benedict, monks were meant to have two outfits because the assumption was that one of them might be dirty, might be getting washed. You'd have people that were washing the priest's vestments. And this is really kind of interesting because sometimes priests were like, well, these are so holy that we can't have a woman touching them. So definitely we need a man to be washing these things. And a lot of what I've learned about laundry, I've learned from a really great article by Carol Rawcliffe, which I'll leave in the show notes. And in that article, she talks about how kind of the ideal laundress for priests or for monks was a woman that was over 50. I think this is for like really unflattering reasons, perhaps because she's not attractive enough to tempt the monks and priests, but you know, also she's probably past the age of childbearing, which would make it helpful But I think it's definitely unflattering no matter how you look at it. But some people did think that the ideal laundress for a monastic community or a priest would be a woman that's over 50. So you have camp followers who are washing clothes. You have people washing clothes for monastic communities. Ordinary people were washing their own clothes as well. And then you do have laundresses that were appointed to royalty. Now, if you could be a laundress to royalty, I mean, first of all, you had to have some talent. We're going to get to how you wash clothes in a second. But if you imagine, if you are a laundress in a royal household, the types of clothes that you'd have to wash, I mean, these things would have pearls and gemstones embroidered on them. They'd be made with gold thread. They'd be made with the most expensive fabrics. It would be a tough, tough job to be a royal laundress. So there's that. I mean, you need to be pretty talented at getting stains out, like my grandma. So, you know, you could be a royal laundress and you might be well taken care of. You might even get yourself a pension. And Carol Rawcliffe does get into that in her article. But one of the things that Carol Rawcliffe gets into when she talks about royal laundresses is the fact that royal laundresses were privy to secrets. I mean, there's a reason that we call secrets dirty laundry. When you're looking at people's clothing, and especially things like their sheets, it's very hard for a royal person, to hide what's going on with their bodies from the person that's washing their clothes and sheets. So, I mean, the most obvious example is probably that the fact that a laundress would know if a royal woman was menstruating, which would mean they'd know if she was pregnant or not. So that's something that, you know, everyone in the castle would be interested in knowing, and that's something that the laundress would know. But also, you'd be able to tell if somebody was sick, perhaps if they're having sexual relations, this kind of stuff you could find out from washing clothes. So a royal laundress would be the top of the heap. She might actually have a pretty decent life compared to her sisters who are washing clothes in the middle of the community. So we talked a little bit about what needed to be washed, who washed it. So it's time to get into how you would actually wash clothes in the Middle Ages. And I think this is something, kind of the technology for washing clothes remained the same for a really long time. So, you know, it was probably very similar in Roman times, similar to stuff you'd see in old movies, you know, Dickensian movies where you'd have people washing clothes in a big vat. But we almost never see this in medieval movies. And I think that's because it's much easier to preserve the idea that nobody washed in the Middle Ages. But that said, you did wash clothes in kind of the same way. So if you picture people using a washboard, as people might have used even 100 years ago before washing machines, that kind of stuff is how you'd wash. You'd be washing stuff by immersing it in water if you could, scrubbing it with something or beating it with something. Often you could put clothes in water, obviously, and you could step on them as a way of washing out or loosening the stains in the clothes, loosening the dirt in the clothes. You can also boil it in water, which is often what people did. You boil it in a big giant vat of water, and that's how you get your clothes clean. If it's something like a rug or a tapestry, you could beat it with a stick. There was a special stick that people used for laundry in the Middle Ages called a buk, and you can find pictures of that online. Women beating clothes or beating other people with buks. It's something to check out. You could beat clothes with rocks. You could scrub them on rocks. In some places you can still find in Europe, there are fountains in the middle of medieval towns, or towns that were around in the Middle Ages, where there are little ramps leading into a fountain. And that was a place where you could scrub your clothes. And sometimes you'll see several of them, so that many laundresses could be washing their clothes at the same time. And there are, one of the ways that we learn about the Middle Ages is by looking at legal complaints. There are often legal complaints about laundresses who are washing the clothes in the area where people are getting their drinking water, and that's obviously not cool, so they get in trouble for that. There's also places where you have tradesmen told not to get rid of things like the dye from their clothes, where people are washing their clothes. Also, you're not supposed to water your animals where people are washing clothes. So there are designated areas often in cities where you're supposed to be doing your laundry, and it's not where you're getting the drinking water from. That's just not cool. And part of the reason for that is they were using soap and they were using urine as well to get stains out. And nobody wants that in their drinking water, of course. So I should say people did use urine to set dyes. They did use urine to wash clothes. But that doesn't mean they left it in there. Nobody wants their clothes to be stinky. So even if they washed their clothes with urine or they boiled their clothes in a mixture of water and urine, they would rinse them afterwards. I really do want to make sure that we know that. Another thing that made it hard to be a laundress was the fact that the soap that they used to wash clothes was often lye soap, which you can make with animal fat or tallow and wood ash. So it's very easy to make, but it is alkaline and it will be really difficult on your hands. And if you want to see this work as a dish soap, you can watch Secrets of the Castle, and I'll put a link there to Ruth, who's washing dishes with lye soap. But it could be really difficult, really hard on your hands. People are washing in the middle of town. They're washing in streams. We know, again, it's in Carol Rockliffe's article, people from the Hotel Dieu in Paris are washing their sheets in the Seine. So they're washing in big rivers as well. And there's even a boatman to go and fish the laundresses out of the river if they manage to get swept away as they're washing sheets in the Seine. There is also a place on the Thames called Lavender Bridge. I might be saying this wrong. Back in the day, they might have said it as Launder Bridge because that V and the U from Roman origin, sometimes they're pronounced as V and sometimes they're pronounced as U. Either way, there is a place on the Thames where you're supposed to be washing your clothes. You could wash them at home as well, but then you'd have to be gathering that water for it and you'd have to be boiling that. Sometimes that was pretty difficult for people who live in an urban environment. It might have just been easier for them to hire a laundress. There's this great book called The Distaff Gospels, and it's hard to know whether it is gently making fun of women or it's really making fun of women, but there are women characters in it who are talking about domestic stuff, and they're actually really, really funny. I love this book because the women in it are hilarious, but they talk about laundry as just kind of regular women talking about domestic stuff. And one of the things they talk about is if you see that your cat is licking its rear end a lot, it's definitely going to rain. You should not do your laundry on that day. So, you know, if your cat's licking itself a lot, don't do your laundry that day because it's going to get rained on. Just a handy tip from the Distaff Gospels to you. But what you can do to kind of counteract that is you can pray to St. Clair. So hope that the skies clear up by praying to St. Clair. So this idea of making sure that you have clear skies is because once you've washed the clothes, you definitely have to dry the clothes, right? You have to dry them. And you could dry them by hanging them up. This is really difficult in the winter or rainy weather. Again, in places like the Hotel Dieu, they have a place where you could hang the stuff inside, but that took up a lot of real estate. You'd probably want to wait until your cat had finished licking and wash your stuff and hang it outside. But the interesting thing about this that I think is interesting is one of the ways that people used to make their clothes fresh and smell beautiful is to spread them out on lavender bushes. And this is something people were doing for a really long time before the Middle Ages and since the Middle Ages. I don't think it's a coincidence that launder and lavender are very, very closely related etymologically. These words are very, very close. It might be a chicken and egg type thing, I don't know. But you'll notice that if you still go to the laundry aisle in your store, you'll see that you can't get rose-scented detergent, but you can still get lavender-scented detergent. So this is a tradition that, you know, has been going on for a really long time, and it's kind of cool that it continues. You'll also find people will still give out as gifts little sachets of lavender, dried lavender, that you're meant to put kind of between your sheets and towels or your seasonal stuff so that it smells nice. I just kind of like the fact that we're still using lavender for that. So this could be one of the reasons that Lavender Bridge is also Launder Bridge on the Thames in London in the Middle Ages. One more thing I want to mention about the dangers of laundry is you did have to boil water, in many cases to wash things. And sometimes we know about how people did laundry because women were killed. They might have drowned doing laundry, and they might have fallen into vats of boiling water, which did happen a couple of times. That's how we know how people did laundry, but it was dangerous. It was a profession that was not easy for people. So we've talked about what needed to be washed, who did the washing, how you did the washing. And then, you know, this is something that really interested me and I couldn't get enough of, and that is stain removal, because maybe I'm the only person who's interested in this, but I thought, you know, how do you get the stains out of your clothes if you're just washing them with like urine or water or lye soap? How are you getting the hard stains out? One of the places where I found stain removal tips was in a book that we now call The Good Wife's Guide by a guy who calls himself Le Ménager de Paris, or the Good Man of Paris. And this is a really fantastic source because it's a guide that a husband put together for a wife that is a lot younger than him. And he teaches her all sorts of things about how to be a good wife. And it includes things like his favorite recipes and how to dress the table for a feast. You know, he says it's really important that you have a florist to get the flower arrangements right for a feast. He tells her how to be obedient and all of this kind of stuff. And it's really super fascinating. It was written in France in the 15th century. But he has a whole long section on stain removal, and I just find it so interesting. I'm going to read you the whole section on it. There are a couple of things that you should know as I get into it. He's talking about Béguine, and this isn't the dance. Béguine was a woman who lived a holy life, but she wasn't a member of a holy order per se. It's kind of Béguine in a nutshell. It's complicated, but that gives you the idea. And he talks about different things that you could use to take stains out. One of the things he talks about is verjuice, and that is, it's like vinegar in that it's a very acidic type of grape juice. So I'm going to read you this whole section on stain removal because I think it's super interesting. And if you don't think this is interesting, well, I just don't know what to say. So here it is from The Good Man of Paris's A Good Wife's Guide, the section on stain removal. You in the beginning, at the proper season, have your women air out, shake out, and inspect your sheets, coverlets, clothing, furs, skins, and such like. Be aware and inform your women that to protect your furs and garments, one should air them often in order to avoid moth damage. Since such vermin breed in the humidity of the fall and winter, and the larvae hatch in the summer, air out the furs and other garments in the sun on fair, dry days. If a dark, damp cloud comes and descends on your garments and you fold them in that condition, this air, enveloped and folded into your garments, will engender worse vermin than before. For this reason, choose continuous dry weather. As soon as you see stormy conditions coming, before it reaches you, have your garments brought inside, shaken out to remove most of the dust, and then cleaned and beaten using dry sticks. The Beguine knows well and will tell you that if there is any oil or other grease stain, here is the remedy. Take urine and heat it until it is warm and soak the spot in it for 2 days. Then, without wringing it, compress the part of the cloth with the spot. If the stain is not removed yet, have Dame Agnes the Beguine put it in more urine with ox gall beaten into it and do as before. Or you can choose this. Have fuller's earth soaked in lye and then put on the stain. Let it dry and then rub. If the earth does not come off easily, have it moistened in lye, let it dry again, and rub it until it comes off. Or if you do not have fuller's earth, prepare ashes soaked in lye and put these well moistened ashes on the spot. Or have very clean chick feathers soaked in really hot water to remove any grease they have clinging to them. Soak them again in clean water, rub the spot well with them, and everything should go away. If there is a stain or fading on a garment of blue cloth, take a sponge, moisten it in clear, clean lye, press it and stroke it over the garment, rubbing the stain, and the color will come back. If there are faded spots on cloth of any other color, put very clean lye, which has not been poured on any other cloth, mixed with ashes, on the spot, and allow it to dry. With rubbing, the original color will be restored. To remove stains from garments of silk, satin, camlet, damask, or other material, soak and wash the stain in verjuice, and it will go away. And even if the garment is faded, the color will return, although I am not sure I believe this. Verjuice. Nota that at the season when fresh verjuice is made, one must take a flask of it without salt and store it, for it is useful for removing spots from dresses and bringing back their color. Fresh or old, it is always reliable. Item: if any of your furs or fur skins have gotten damp and have stiffened, remove the fur piece from the garment and sprinkle the stiffened skin with wine. It should be sprayed by mouth, just as a tailor sprays water on the section of a garment that he wants to hem. Toss flour on the dampened part and let it dry for a day, then rub the skin well and it will return to its original state. After that, the good man of Paris gets back into other things that you should tell your servants to do. But I think this really is interesting for a lot of reasons. First of all, it tells us about stain removal in the 15th century, which, you know, is not something that you come across every day. And I think that's fascinating. But also the fact that it is a husband telling his wife the best way to remove stains, which means that he knows the best way to remove stains, which means that he's already a pretty domestic guy. He really has a handle on how you do things in the domestic realm, which I think is just, this whole book is kind of a touching thing to look at, especially because a lot of the reason he's training his wife so well is because he expects that he will die before her and he wants her to be a good wife to her next husband. So it's a really great book, stain removal and everything. So I realize that medieval laundry is probably not the podcast you were expecting to hear this week, or maybe ever. But one of the reasons that I got into doing this podcast and writing stuff is because I really get enthusiastic about small parts of the Middle Ages, and I really like to share them with people. And so I really appreciate you coming on this laundry journey with me to learn about how people took care of their clothes in the Middle Ages. Before we go, here's Peter from medievalist.net to tell us what's on the website. What's going on, Peter?
Hi, Danielle. Well, we're back into the swing of things with the website in terms of technical issues. Everything that's been kind of affecting us for about the last month should be solved. So I hope you're enjoying a nice, clean, crisp website viewing. A couple things to check out this week include Timothy Jones looking at the Charter of the Forest. It's the lesser-known sibling of Magna Carta, but a pretty important document in its own right. Meanwhile, Gillian Polak tells us about the novel The Rebel Angels by Robertson Davies. It's for her Medieval Reads column, and it's about a novel set in a world that's permeated by the Middle Ages, but the actual setting is right here in Canada. So I want to check that book out myself. So that and a lot more on medievalist.net, so please check us out.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks.
As always, a big shout out goes to our patrons at patreon.com, whose generosity allows me to bring all my quirky love for the Middle Ages to you each week. I hope you're enjoying some of the sweet perks, like a subscription to Medieval Warfare magazine, your monthly book with our Boydell and Brewer book club, or an ad-free desktop version of medievalist.net. If you haven't had a look yet, you can find all the action at patreon.com/medievalists. For more of the wonderful weirdness of the medieval world, be sure to follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. You can also follow me, Danielle Cebulski, on social media at 5minmedievalist or 5minutemedievalist. And you can read about laundry and all sorts of fascinating tidbits in my new book, Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction. You can find it and my other books on Amazon. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening. Have yourself an amazing day.